Live from Indianapolis and across the Hoosier State, this is an Indiana Dialogue with Governor Mitch Daniels. To ask a question of the governor, call now toll-free at 1-800-603-6453. That's 1-800-603-6453. Once again, here's Steve Simpson.
Continue on here from the Channel 8 studios. Of course, we're also taking your phone calls. We'll be getting them in just a minute. I've got a question for you. What surprised you most about this first year?
Oh, Steve, there were daily surprises, I guess. I think that probably the sometimes it was difficulty persuading even members of my own party that the situation in Indiana really required vigorous, aggressive action, and right now. And there were surprises inside state government all the time. You know, every day somebody say, you know, we're paying $8,000 for a copier we can get for $2,700. You know, we're paying 59 cents the laminated driver's license, and we just got it knocked down to 34. Did you know we had one state car for every three employees? And you know, those kind of surprises, they tend to be delightful ones because our folks go fix those problems.
Right, things you can, things you can fix.
But, every day, something new. This is my first elective office, and so I'm sure I'll continue being surprised for a long time.
Right, okay, I've got to get over here to a question. It's a type of a question you've heard so far before this evening, but go ahead, what's your name and your question?
Ben from Indianapolis. What time zone would Indianapolis be on? And if it's not, would it make more sense to keep us on Central Time, since we're closer to Chicago?
All right, another time zone question.
Yeah, well, Ben, first of all, Indianapolis in the Eastern Time Zone. The elected officials of Indianapolis said they want to stay in the Eastern Time Zone. That's the answer. That was the same answer for most of the state. As I said to the folks in South Bend and elsewhere, you know, I can see an argument if we had a debate in Indianapolis about moving to Central Time. I think a good argument could be made, as you just did, but under the laws, and frankly, your common sense tells you, the choice of time zones ought to really be a matter for local decision. Where do people work? Where do they shop? Where do they commute to? And for now, at least the folks of Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, Elkhart, Richmond, Jeffersonville, all these places, Bloomington, seem to want to stay in the Eastern time zone where they are. And as long as that's the case, I think most of the state will want to go with them.
All right, let's get to a phone call here, our first one of the evening. George in, Indianapolis, as it turns out. George, you're on with Governor Mitch Daniels.
Yes, how are you, Governor?
I'm good. I like this half, George, because my wife says I have a good face for radio, and I can relax a little bit here.
All right, let me be brief and get off, because I know other people they want to talk to you about. But I'm concerned about Indigo. And my concern is that there are several people working there that have convictions for fraud, for rape. There is a union, which is Amalgamated Transit Union 1070, who most people feel like is affiliated with WIBC 1070, which there's no truth to that. But it stops a lot of people from calling in and reporting stuff. Like there's been at least four or five sexual offenses by drivers committed.
Let me get the governor in here. Governor, first of all, Indigo really isn't your bailiwick.
Well, no, it is. It is an activity of the city of Indianapolis, and it's an important one. It is important we make sure to have some opportunity for folks who don't have their own transportation. I know it has struggled. I hadn't heard about those problems before, but sound like George has something to report that I'm sure somebody listening will take a look at.
But what about public transportation? Is that a priority in this state? Obviously, they're talking about the I-69 corridor, perhaps getting state federal money for that as well. Is that something that the state should be involved with, and how important would it be to a state?
I think transportation of people and goods is extremely important. As I said, if you call yourself the crossroads of America, and we do with good reason, you got a great opportunity to be a distribution center and a logistics center and a place where businesses locate, and you can get to so many of the customers of America in a day from here. That's different than public transportation. And I think that is public transportation, meaning generally mass transit of buses and trains and so forth, I think of only limited significance right now in Indiana. Very important in our northwest corner. If we can get people in and out of Chicago more quickly and conveniently, from Lake County, Porter County, LaPorte County up north. I think a great economic leap forward can be taken there, and we created in this very historic session, after 30 years of trying, of folks trying, a regional development authority up there that I think will choose to make some of its investments in mass transit. It may come to an area like Indianapolis eventually as the surrounding areas build up. I don't think it's in the immediate horizon, but one day, yes.
All right, let me get to another phone call. Mel in Indianapolis, you're on with Governor Mitch Daniels. Go ahead, Mel.
Yes. Good evening, Governor.
Hey, Mel.
Listen, I commend you. I heard you saying that you had taken your oath on the Bible, so that lets me know that you do believe in that. My question is this, Governor. In recent times, especially in our last election, we had some issues come before us that the evangelical Christian community stood up and voted for the man that was closest to God, and even myself changing my party to do just the same and to advocate for that. My question is this. Do you believe in same-sex marriage or the sanctity of marriage between a man and a woman? Also, do you believe that the Word of God and the biblical principles that this country was founded on by our forefathers, Madison, Adams, and Jefferson, just to say a few, do you believe that this country was founded on the biblical Christian principles? Also, do you believe that intelligent design could be a companion program or a curriculum taught alongside of evolution?
All right. Thank you, Mel. We kind of touched on intelligent design earlier.
Well, Mel, with regard to your first two questions, I don't support same-sex marriage being legalized in the state. I do believe that marriage ought to be reserved for the traditional definition. That's not the same as advocating or accepting discrimination in other realms of life, but I think marriage is special and ought to be and ought to remain that way. And secondly, it's not a matter of what I believe. It's an historical fact that this country and the freedoms that we were founded around, that were so uniquely American at the beginning, do stem from the Judeo-Christian tradition. To deny that really is simply to try to rewrite history. Now, we are, as we discussed in the previous hour, a diverse state. And I happen to be a believer. I'm a Presbyterian, if it matters, and proudly so, and proud to share. But in my day job, when I'm at work, I'm the governor of every Hoosier, and I think it's very, very important that I operate in an inclusive way, and in a way that does not cross the line in which government becomes an advocate or an establisher, as the Constitution prohibits, of religion. Ask me off the job, ask me on Sunday, and you'll get a very, very clear answer. But I think my duty requires me to very carefully maintain a neutrality among beliefs.
All right, let's go back down to our studios on the Circle in downtown Indianapolis. Eric Berman is there with another question for us.
All right, thank you, Steve. And we have another I-69 question, and it comes from Ron Blankenship of Bargersville. Ron?
In 2004, I walked next to RV1 in the Martinsville Fall Foliage Parade wearing my Man Mitch t-shirt. For future visits to the parade and traveling back and forth to work every day, I will have to take back roads or pay a toll to a foreign company. As I read about major moves on the website, all I see are the benefits of this project. On the website, the U.S. Department of Transportation claims that 47,000 jobs could be created for every $1 billion spent for roads, but it doesn't state how many of these jobs will be in Indiana, created out of state, or if they'll be created in Mexico and Canada. My question has two parts. First, how many of the 47,000 jobs will end up in Indiana, or will I-69 just speed up the exit of Indiana manufacturing jobs? Second, surely there are some risks by handing over our toll roads to a foreign company. Could you talk honestly with the people of Indiana and tell us the risks of major moves and even building I-69?
Okay, well, was it Rob or Ron?
Ron.
Ron, first of all, listen, thank you for joining us before, and I appreciate your support. I'm trying hard to live up to it. You know, if it was like most of the, I don't know, 100 parades that I was in that year, we handed out the roadmap that I'm holding in my hand right now. It very plainly said I thought I-69 should be built, and I know folks, honest folks, sincerely differ about that, but I believe it's a right step for our state. I believe it would create jobs not only in the southwest quadrant of our state, which is one of the poorest and longest suffering areas of Indiana, which I'm not prepared to forget or walk away from, but actually all the way up and down the corridor, all the way up through Anderson and Fort Wayne, businesses would have a new route for their goods and a new access to customers. Now, the jobs figures that came up, heck, I don't know. Don't pretend to know. I'm just telling you that it is commonly understood that a whole lot of jobs, as many as 47,000 per billion, according to the federal government, come into being, and not somewhere else, come into being in building and in proximity to roads like 69. So is it $37,000? Is it 47,000 jobs, I mean? I don't know, but I am utterly convinced that this would be a very important step for Bargersville and for towns all the way up and down that road. You know, as to a foreign operation, we have no way of knowing. We haven't even offered up this idea yet. We would ask the whether any company anywhere was prepared to bring its money, so I don't have to raise anybody's taxes in this state. You know, at $2.50 gas and $3 gas like we're paying, I don't think doubling or tripling the gas tax is a good idea. And I don't think leaving half those road projects unbuilt for another 20 years is a very good idea. So I'm just looking for a practical solution to a very difficult problem. Now, if it happened that either a participant in I-69 or somebody who steps forward to lease that toll road has a foreign address, it doesn't bother me at all. And I'll tell you why. Because what bothers me is American dollars go out of this country in a trade deficit. I want them to come back here and put Hoosiers to work. That's why we went to Japan, exactly why we went to Japan and Taiwan. And therefore, if somebody with an address in London or an address in Paris or somewhere else is willing to bring that money here and put a lot of Hoosiers to work, I'm ready to talk.
We continue our conversation with Governor Mitch Daniels here across the state on Network Indiana and downtown Indianapolis. Here you have a question. What is your name and your question?
My name is Renee. Governor, I have a little bit of a different question. I'm growing very concerned about the lack of competitiveness in our legislative districts for our congressmen in Indiana. And I'm wondering, what, if anything, can you do to get rid of this gerrymandering situation that we have in the state where we have really very little choice when we go to the polls?
Renee, that is an excellent question. You know, I was about to complain to Steve that like too much of our public life in Indiana, Indianapolis is monopolizing the conversation. So I hope we're going to get some questions from all over the rest of the state, because in far too many ways, Indianapolis gets too much attention, too many of the resources in the past. We're out to kind of balance that. But I'm glad for your question, because it's important to the whole state. And you are quite right. And by the way, you know, Indiana isn't any different than look at the U.S. Congress. Look at most other state legislatures. We share this problem. I don't think it's healthy. I think competition is almost always very important. It's competition almost always forces people to improve, therefore I agree. It is unfortunate if you get a situation, and we're coming to one in Indiana, where many of the districts there aren't two choices for people. One answer is to involve someone other than the career politicians in drawing the lines, which happens around the census each time. And many states are looking at it. I think we should too. I think we should look at a nonpartisan approach. It's not easy to do, but I think we can improve on a process in which, and I'm not blaming anybody, but when legislators draw their own lines, there's a very natural tendency to take care of themselves and each other, and they're human like everybody else. Therefore, I think we should look at states like Iowa, which have broken with that tradition.
Governor Daniels, you said, let's get out of Indianapolis. We're going to do that. We're going to go to Evansville now.
Well, about time.
And I'm sorry, I forgot your first name, sir. Go ahead with your first name and your question for the governor.
Ron.
Ron, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Daniels?
Hey, I'm good, Ron.
Hey, I got a quick question here. I've been talking to our representative, Phil Hoy.
Yes, sir.
Here in Evansville, Indiana. And I recently got hit with by a lady that didn't have insurance. And, you know, it's a long process that you know. You got to go through the court system. If she doesn't have insurance, you got to turn around and sue them. I think there should be some type of law that, you know, if they don't show proof of insurance on the scene, you know, maybe give them 2 to 3 days. But if they don't come up with insurance, there should be, you know, something done, you know, take their registration or tag or something. Because Kentucky is passing a law January 1st. And that's in our Evansville Courier on December 14th. And that's what they're doing also.
Okay. So, Ron, thank you. We're talking here about then insurance on your car in the event of an accident. Is that what we're talking about?
Correct, yes.
And I may be learning something I didn't know here. You're saying that maybe in some places you get a little grace period to show proof if you didn't show it at the scene?
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, Maybe some people might leave them home, you know, like, you know, but
I know because, you know, believe me, after years of trying to persuade 4 daughters to be sure they put that little card in the car, and then I keep finding it in the kitchen, right? Anybody had this experience? You know, it could have happened to one of us, I suppose. Well, we'll take a look at it. You know, I think the law that says you ought not be driving a car unless you are insured is a very important one, and it needs to be rigorously enforced. But if you're saying that maybe somebody who has complied with the law and just can't prove it at that instant ought to be given a little bit of grace, that'd be worth a look. And when I see Phil Hoy, I'll talk to him about it.
All right, let's get to a Brownsburg for another call. Phil on, Paul on Network Indiana with Governor Mitch Daniels. Go ahead.
Yeah, Governor, I've been working on an issue that I've been trying to get resolved through that was caused by an error with a state employee. And I brought this up to you at a town hall meeting out in Danville back a few months ago. And I'm not getting any success at getting any resolution. Do you not feel that the state ought to be as responsible for problems it causes as the people are for anything that they should cause a problem with the state?
I sure do, Paul. And you know, if we had to go with this and didn't get it solved, we'll have a second look. I mean, I can't prejudge that your view of the situation is the right one, but it very well may be. And yes, of course. You know, among the improvements we're working so hard to make, I constantly tell our folks that we have appointed every citizen out there is a customer. You need to think of them that way. That means we don't want them standing in line. We don't want backlogs. We have cleared up backlogs, I'm happy to say, in everything from unemployment insurance to medical disability claims to minority business certifications to environmental permits to various kinds of tax filings. You know, government is the last monopoly. It has no competition. We were talking about competition a minute ago. And we Americans have always distrusted bigness, right? We're careful about big business because a monopoly tends to overcharge its customers and abuse them. And government, as long as we're here, we're going to work very hard to operate in a way that values each person that we serve and recognizes that they ought to be treated just as you would treat a great customer at your hardware store. So, Paul, if you will, off the air, can we do this, Steve? Can we get Paul's name and number and the essence of the problem, and I'll have somebody check on him?
Sure, we can do that. Make sure we get that back at the station, right. Paul's number, and another question from here. Go ahead.
Something you touched on a few moments ago, gasoline tax. Yeah. I've been retired from my first vocation for 10 years, and I started a business that has to do with a lot of driving, delivery service, and I do some other security work now. Gasoline prices have gone up and down, the same as what the oil in the Gulf has. You heard a comment on the radio couple of days ago. What hurricane did I miss today that they had to jump gas prices 25 cents? Mm-hmm. When on the open market, oil actually went down per barrel by over a dollar that particular day. My question specifically is, there's a lot of talk of investigation into some of the, even the local companies that are accused of price gouging at times. And when that talk becomes rhetoric among politicians, somehow the prices seem to go down. And then when they go down, the rhetoric goes away. At least that's what it appears to be time after time after time. What would be something that you think that we might be able to accomplish in the state? I don't mind paying a couple pennies more on gasoline if we had a flat tax or a consumption tax instead of a state income tax. But right's right and wrong's wrong on what some of the oil companies are doing on these prices going up and down. They just went up again yesterday. It used to be on Thursdays you could see every gas station in the state hit the same price. And by the weekend it was a shotgun scatter pattern. But the following Thursday again, every state, statewide, every station hit the same price.
Well, you know, if I would just put it this way, first of all, Attorney General Steve Carter, I talked to daily during especially the period of the big run-up. He had people looking everywhere, high and low, to see if there was any evidence of this happening. He didn't find it. If he did, I'd be the first to say we ought to jump right on it. I will just say I don't really think it happens to any meaningful extent. If it does, I think it's very, very scattered. At least it has been in our most recent experience. What you had was all kinds of folks scrambling to get any supply at all. Most of these are small business people. And, you know, they were, I think, just caught up in a very, very tough situation. I'm not inclined to beat up on them. You know, I'll tell you what, there were still a lot of politicians hollering about this when prices plummeted by a dollar. So I didn't see the same cause and effect pattern that maybe you did. I almost looked at it the other way. I thought there were still some politicians calling about holding hearings after gas had dropped a dollar. So it's always something we should watch for. But I don't think it's an answer to our problems. We make a lot of our own problems in this area. We've got regulations that say you can only sell a certain kind of gas in this part of Indiana. You can only sell a different kind of gas in Illinois. We wind up with too much of one and not enough of the other. And I'd really rather work on those problems. I'm going to tell you one more. There was just a vote, I hope I'm not the only one noticed, that once again said we will keep a ton of American oil and gas locked up in something called the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. That vote was really an unfortunate event for folks in a state like this that depends on transportation and consumes a lot of gasoline. So I'd rather work on those problems. Let's get more supply. The day we do, we'll have prices stable where they ought to be. Yes, sir.
Let's get to another phone call with Governor Mitch Daniels. Mary on Network Indiana. Go ahead. You're on with the governor.
Hello, Governor. This is Mary. I have a question for you about the child support. My husband has paid child support ever since he was ordered to. Every week it's deducted from his paycheck. When they converted the child support system over to the computers, they went to what they call a front-loading system, which at the beginning of the month, everybody that has to pay child support for that month is already behind, even though their payment isn't due yet. As of last February, they took my husband's tax check because they said he was behind. We have talked to the Child Support Division. We have gotten the paperwork from them. I have my husband's paycheck stubs. He talked to the prosecutor for the Child Support Division. She will not give him an appointment to come in and try to straighten this out.
Where do you live, Mary?
I live in Indianapolis.
Oh, here. Again, I hope off the air if you'll give us your name and number. Thank you for this question. I'm sorry about your problem. Let me say a couple words about this. Child support has been one of my main passions, and I've got a lot of them right now. But I'll tell you what, when I was traveling this state, I heard over and over and over again, people say, what did you learn out there in that RV? What did you learn on all those trips? One of the clearest lessons was the problem we have in child support. We are one of the worst states in America at collecting it. Now, Mary, I'm glad to hear, had a good experience till this hitch came up a year ago. But we are only collecting about half the money that a court has said a single parent, usually a mom, not always, is owed. And that's terrible. You know, we have moved it up this year from a little under half to about 53%. And you'll say, well, that's not enough, and you're right. And let me just tell you that every percent is about $7 million goes straight in the pocket of a single mom who really needs it. And I met so many of these really heroic women in places around the state who would tell me how they had gone through the process of getting a court to rule that they and their child should be supported, and then nobody would collect it for them. And we are moving to, I hope, a system that will do much, much better. It will avoid problems like Mary just had, and it will fix a problem in which local prosecutors very often do not pay much attention to this. They say, look, I'm here to work on burglary and murder and things like that, and besides, that's what I get public acclaim for. And child support too often gets kind of crowded down to the low end of the priority list. And this is, you really had a hot button here, Mary, with me. Please give your name and number to the folks at the station, and I'll ask them to get it to me, and we'll see if somebody can help you.
All right, let me get to another question here from West Lafayette. Joseph, you're on with Governor Mitch Daniels. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Joe Vannable from West Lafayette, and I wanted to ask you, I think one of your best ideas has been to institute a graduated income tax in Indiana. That didn't work last time around. I'm wondering if you're considering pushing that again.
Well, Joe, first I got to disappoint you because I did not propose a graduated income tax, and in fact, I don't favor that. Now, I did propose a one-time 1% surtax on the wealthiest, roughly 1 in 20 Hoosiers, and that was, you know, you're not going to find me proposing tax increases again, probably. I want Texas to go the other direction for everybody. But again, I felt like our first order of business was to get ourselves out of this fiscal ditch we're in and pay our bills and pay back the schools and local governments that we've delayed payments to over the course of time and get square with our accounts. And that was a proposal as to how we might do it. But it was not a proposal for an ongoing tax. If it had passed, it would be expiring 3 days from now, not to return. So I appreciate the sentiment, but duty requires that I tell you that wasn't quite what I said.
But it was one of the things that obviously your party had a, you know, when you came out with that in your State of the State address, there were some in your party that right away said, no, we're not going there, Governor. Thanks, we love you, but. Right?
Yes, I mean, it was a different idea. Many of our ideas have been new and different. I will say that both in terms of the public sentiment that was measured and, frankly, I think the majority of members in the legislature, both parties, I think there was probably a majority for it. But within my party, there were some who felt very, very strongly they had taken a pledge not to support any kind of tax increase, not even a one-time, very limited one. And I respected their I talk about keeping my pledges. I respect their determination to keep theirs. So we wound up going a different way. You know, I want to observe that another of our new ideas that some folks disputed to start with was tax amnesty. Tax amnesty wound up raising four times the amount of money that was estimated for it, and we got an amount of money that's not too different from what would have come from that surtax proposal. So we are on our way back to a balanced budget and to paying our bills and to be able to start increasing our investment in social services and other things as makes sense, but we got there a different route.
Governor, have you ever been to Etna Green?
Well, I've been about everywhere. What county is Etna?
Well, we're going to ask LaLena, who is next up on the phone here. LaLena from Etna Green, I believe. What county is that in, LaLena?
That's Kosciuszko County.
Oh, yeah. I know where we're talking about.
Okay, now he knows. Okay, go ahead. What's your question for the governor?
Good evening, Governor Daniels. I'm going to give you a little background here on my life. I'm raising a 4-year-old profoundly autistic child. Who has a clinical diagnosis of mercury toxicity, and we believe that she became toxic from her vaccines, from the thimerosal contained in them. My question for you, Governor Daniels, Representative Cindy Noe is concerned about this thimerosal issue as well, and I've talked to her or no, her aides, I guess I should say. I haven't talked to her personally. But we were wondering if legislation was drawn up and it came across your desk, would you ban thimerosal from vaccines?
Well, it's an interesting question. First of all, Cindy Noe's a great person and a good thinker, and anything that she decides is good policy, I'm going to have a look at. In a case like this, it would depend a lot on the science. Also, it's not clear to me that the federal government ultimately determines which medicines are allowed on the market and what goes in them and what can't, and I'm not even sure it's within the power of any one state to override that. But again, if Cindy proposed it, I would look at it. I think there are a lot of scientific questions around here. It may be proven that there is some causation involved, and I'll certainly be watching and reading on that front. Let me just say, God bless you for the time and love I know you must put into helping an autistic child. One of those waiting lists I talked about that we found when we came to office was for a variety of populations that have a very serious medical problem. We've got people standing in line for what are called Medicaid waiver services, developmentally disabled kids and folks with severe spinal injuries, and autism's another one. And we are just determined to find ways to, and we found some, particularly in the developmentally disabled area, to take care of more folks. Even the folks who are in the programs now have helped us look for ways to stretch the money a little further, because it tugs at their hearts also that they're getting, in most cases, great service, but then so many other folks aren't getting any. And autism is one of those areas we're going to, I hope, get to first.
Governor Mitch Daniels is with us for another half hour. More of your phone calls, more questions from folks here in our studios in downtown Indianapolis. We continue on with more on Network Indiana.
Yo, Brittany!
Dude, you are so late.
Yeah, tell me about it. Ever since I proposed, hun, can you help me with the honeymoon? Hun, can you help me with the invitations?
Who needs invitations? Seriously.
No kidding. You told us. I wrote it down on a napkin.
Bada boom, bada bing. We're going to the wedding.
Yeah, next you'll want me to bake the cake.
You're having a cake at your wedding?
Fortunately, this isn't the real world. The real world has the 2006 Convention Center Bridal Show, presented by After Hours Formal Wear. Come to the Sagamore Ballroom on January 21st and 22nd. It's your chance to see beautiful bridal fashions, meet DJs, caterers, limo providers, florists, and reception venues. Plus, runway fashion shows featuring bridal apparel and accessories. Saturday, you can register to win one of many awesome wedding prizes, from honeymoons to bridal jewelry given away every hour. Plus, on Saturday, you can be one of several lucky brides competing in our wedding cake dig. The 2006 Convention Center Bridal Show, presented by After Hours Formal Wear. January 21st and 22nd. Stop by any After Hours Formal Wear location and pick up your dollar off admissions coupon.
The WIBC Bears on Patrol program, sponsored by St. Vincent Women's Hospital and Classic Cleaners, is a special community project designed to equip police vehicles with teddy bears, which provide comfort to children involved in traumatic situations. You can help. Donate a new medium-sized teddy bear at any Classic Cleaners location or St. Vincent Women's Hospital on Township Line Road. This special program is brought to you by the St. Vincent Women's Hospital, Classic Cleaners, and 1070 WIBC.
Here with Governor Mitch Daniels across the state of Indiana on Network Indiana. I'm Steve Simpson. The governor is here, and we're going to continue on. Actually, let me get to a question over here, Governor. If you could, go ahead. Your question, yeah, sir, for Governor.
Governor, I got a comment, then I got a question. I just want to go on record that I think Indiana in my area should stay on the time it's at.
Okay, there you go.
I would have a hard job retraining my rooster to crow. So, but yeah. My question is, I work for the city, and the city has gotten some equipment for security in case of terrorists and stuff. Mm-hmm. Some of the equipment was they got from grants and stuff. We're going to have to be trained to service this equipment, and it's added more equipment that we're going to have to do. And is there a way that the city can go after a grant or some federal money to train us and to get wages and some stuff that we're going to have to work on this equipment?
That's a good question, and the answer is possibly so. I'm pretty sure this would come under the heading of the Homeland Security Funds, which in the wake of 9/11, Congress voted for a huge increase in the amount of this. In fact, my personal opinion is, in defense of taxpayers, we got to watch some of this. In other words, I think we could waste a lot of money as a society protecting places that are not ever going to be targets. You know, now Indianapolis could be, but there's a lot of places getting this equipment that maybe not. But it's here, and if it's imposing an extra burden, you know, the state does try to gather up the suggestions from all the localities as to what they think would be useful, and put them in some kind of order and present those to the federal government. And I would think, and I'll mention this to the Director of Homeland Security, that if we've acquired certain equipment, then the last thing you want to do is let it run down or not be ready when it's needed. And I've already heard some stories about that, you know, about fancy gas masks and things in the back of fire vehicles, and the rubber's already eroding or something. And so that's a very good point, and I'll pass it on.
All right, let me get to another call here. Alex, you're on with Governor Mitch Daniels. Go ahead. Alex, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on with the governor.
Oh, yes, Governor. I had a quick question for you. I've been involved with law enforcement for 7 years now in various capacities. I am a minister here in Indianapolis and also a truck driver, and I have noticed in my travels and in my work that crime rates tend to be higher and more deadly in areas that have poor streets, little or no street lighting, and poor community services. And I would really appreciate it if the state of Indiana would commission a study and then, based on the results of the study, start a organization to promote better streets and putting in a street lights in low lighting areas that have extremely high and very violent crime rates.
Well, Alex, thank you. I don't think I've ever talked to a truck-driving law enforcement preacher before.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
That is a rare combination of skills. So thank you for those are three great services. Thank you very much. Well, I'm sure your point would be backed up by data. There's just an awful lot that says that, that maintaining not just the lighting, but just the physical integrity of a neighborhood has a lot to do with whether more crime happens or less. It goes so far as it's even called the broken window syndrome, the idea that if somebody breaks a window, fix it, because it says we have standards around here. And when a city maintains itself that way, or a neighborhood does, that it does have a positive effect on keeping crime down. So I'm not the mayor of anywhere, and this is primarily a local matter. I will just say that we're doing all we can to strengthen local government, and I know that no priority comes higher than law enforcement for folks like Mayor Peterson.
You know, let me ask you a question, because obviously you get you've done these town hall meetings all over the state, and a lot of people are asking a lot of questions. The thought came to my mind for the past hour and 45 minutes: all politics is local. And I guess you see that a lot as you travel around the state, from the standpoint of the concerns of the local folks. They're it's what they live every single day. And we can talk big picture items at the, you know, we get caught up, for example, in radio, covering the legislature and these kind of big picture things. But in the long run, there are just a lot of people just working hard, trying to do the best they can, right?
Sure. And that's one reason I do this. I mean, believe me, when I go to, you know, to Winnemac or Crown Point or any of these places, maybe half the questions will deal with matters that affect us all. But very many of them will deal with something that is specific. It might be a specific case that somebody has personally experienced. It might be a local matter. And sometimes it's things that I can't do anything about that are really the mayor's business or the county council's business. But sometimes it alerts me to a problem, maybe something in state government we can improve, or a problem I hadn't heard about before. I write them down. I bring them back. We see if we can't do something about them. So what is public service about but trying to make life better And the conditions of life that matter most to most people are the ones closest to them.
And I guess that was kind of the other part of what I was thinking as I've been watching you and listening to you talk to the folks here and around the state. What is state government's role in your mind? What is state government providing to the state of Indiana? Or what would you like it to be providing?
I would say, first of all, the role of state government is to provide necessary services, and that's an important word, in the most excellent way possible at the lowest cost to taxpayers. And we got a lot of, and we talked tonight, we got a lot of room to improve in both directions, making service better and getting taxes down, costs down. Our folks are doing a fabulous job, but there's a lot of work to do. The necessary word, I might have a different view than some. My own view is government should be limited. Government should do those things that only government can do, that we must do together in a public way. Some things are obvious. Law enforcement, public education, excellent infrastructure, and many social services for those who are less fortunate. But I do think we have to examine each of these things very carefully. There is a tendency always for government to grow and to constantly invent new reasons for being and new missions. And I make sure our folks never lose sight that any dollar we're spending in state government, some Hoosier worked hard to earn. And we should never, ever, ever take that dollar away from somebody who worked for it through the coercive power taxation unless we have a very important purpose for it, and then we should make sure we stretch that dollar as far as possible.
All right, let me get to another phone call here with Governor Mitch Daniels. Donna, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Governor Daniels, I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm from Florida, and we didn't have a state income tax. All we had was a state sales tax. And my question is, I noticed when I moved here in July that we have both a state sales tax and a state income tax. Is there a reason why we have both and not just one or the other?
Well, Donna, it's a choice this state has made. I guess probably most states have some amount of both. I will say that, first of all, Indiana has historically been, when you roll it all together, all the forms of taxes that you pay, a reasonably low tax state. But we've been drifting upward a little bit in recent years. There's another reason that I wanted to run for office, see if we could do something about that. We had an income tax and no sales tax until maybe three decades ago. And the sales tax has been put in place, and as taxes tend to do, it's been growing. They've added a penny every so many years to get to where we are today. My sense is, compared to Florida, when you put it all together, we're not too very different, but the composition of the taxes you pay is different. Florida's economy is growing more strongly than ours, and that's the best answer. You know, the best answer to getting taxes down further in this state, there's two answers. One is to control spending, which we have begun to do very, very rigorously. But the other long-term answer is to grow more jobs, more income in this state, so we can lighten the burden a little bit on everybody.
All right, another question up here.
You've mentioned keeping Indiana's college graduates in Indiana. What are you doing to help Indiana students afford college?
Well, very important question. We do have in Indiana one of the best, I believe, loan and grant programs at the state level, one that other states, frankly, would do well to emulate. It is never enough. And we always have students who struggle, who take on more debt than we wish they would in order to get through school. Certainly, I said earlier, as soon as we can get the books of this state balanced, education, including higher education, has got to be near the top of our priority list for new investment. I happen to favor models that fund students as opposed to institutions. I would rather do more in the programs that allow students to then choose which institution, shop among them, and try to find the best, most affordable bargain. I have not been one of those, and I won't be, that attempts to sort of control prices at our state schools or beat on them about the decisions they make. I believe that the best control on that really is the marketplace itself. And some of them, and when they raised tuition fairly aggressively the last couple of years, saw applications flatten or even go down. And you can bet that got their attention. So I don't want to go that route particularly, but I do favor finding ways to fund students more effectively at the higher education level, and also in Ivy Tech and our new community college, growing community college system, and all the ways that people need training. You know, education isn't just a year one to year 21 endeavor anymore. We got to think about educating folks who are well on up and in the workforce already.
We haven't had a question about Bureau of Motor Vehicles. Of course, you promised changes.
So you're going to fix that, are you?
Yes, I am.
Okay, all right.
There have been some changes there. Are you pleased with how those changes took place?
I'm convinced that the right kind of changes took place. Every administration back for 20 years has said the same thing. There have been study after study. We got way too many license branches. We got more than California and Texas and almost anywhere. And
it is kind of a universal joke. I mean, I've lived in a couple of states, and a joke meaning it's like, you know, the punchline is at the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Well, I think very, very, very few states have had an excellent system, and we want an excellent one here. And so, yes, I mean, here as in some other areas, we did what people have known needed to be done, but nobody wanted to quite go take it on. Now, was it done in the best way? No. More notice could have been given. The timing could have been better. I'm not sure whether in the end they picked exactly the right branches in every case, but I think they tried hard to have an open and fair process. They made changes in their initial proposal, left some open and worked out some compromises in some other places. But because of what they did, there'll be millions of dollars which are not going to be stuck in the government's pocket. They're going to be plowed back into better training, new and more modern branches. They needed a technology overhaul, which is going to take a few more months, but that should speed things up. I'm going back to treating people like good customers. They send secret shoppers into the branches now. They have customer satisfaction ratings, which we're going to look at. Branch managers whose customers say that was okay are going to get rewarded for it. Branches where customers say they didn't treat me well or I waited a long time are going to not do so well. And I'm convinced, by the way, the whole idea that we should have branches all over the place because it will bring people to certain areas, I understand it, but it is not the way to think about this in my opinion. I don't want the citizens of this state to have to go to a branch ever if it can be avoided. I don't think you should have to take your valuable time, get and drive somewhere and wait in a line just to get your government's permission to drive your car. And so part of this change is to minimize the number of times you go at all. That's why I proposed a 6-year driver's license. That's 2 more years you don't have to go anywhere. That's why I propose letting you get more than a year of plates at a time if you want. We'll give you a discount. I didn't get that passed yet, but we're going to try again. We're going to ramp up the mail, the internet, and try to make it easier for people not to spend time and money on this process.
You know what? We have a call. Vern from Indianapolis. Vern, go ahead. You're on with Governor Daniels. I hope I didn't take your question, Vern.
What do you mean you didn't take my question?
Did you have a question about the Bureau of Motor Vehicles?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to discuss it with him. Concerning how poorly it's run.
Okay, so you don't see the change. You're on with Governor Daniels now, so you don't see any changes. Is that what you're saying?
No, sir. I went in one this morning to try and transact business, and the branch manager actually told me she did not know what to do.
Well, Vern, off the air, tell somebody which branch that was. I'm not doubting you for a minute. We got a long way to go. As I said, training. I hope she didn't treat you rudely or otherwise. But we got to put more money into training. We got to simplify some of our transactions if we can. I think we ask folks to know how to do way too many things. You know, I want to move some of the plate work out to the auto dealers, who I think most of them are ready to take it.
Right.
They'll know what to do. But I'm sorry for the experience, Vern, because that kind of thing happens too often. That's exactly why we're going through this process.
Jane in Fort Wayne, you're next with Governor Mitch Daniels. Go ahead, Jane. Jane, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Am I on with the governor?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you must be Gene.
Yes, I'm Gene here.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I heard Jane in my ear. You're Gene. Go ahead.
Right. I am a transplant patient, kidney and pancreas, and I have to rely on immune suppressant drugs that are quite expensive. Indiana Medicaid has what they call a spend down, which they consider excess income, which is between roughly around $600, the supplemental income standard, and what I actually get from Social Security disability, which in 2006 will be $1,062 or roughly in that area. So they're saying I've got to spend of that $1,062, $443 before I get any help at all from Indiana Medicaid. And I can't run my house and buy my groceries and pay the heating bills and the increase in the gas on right around $600 a month. So I'm not going to get any help with my prescriptions. And quite frankly, on January 1st, I don't know how I'm going to get my prescriptions to keep myself alive.
All right. Governor Daniels?
Well, Gene, once again, first of all, I'm sorry for the health problems you've experienced. I guess at the same time, I got to say I'm so grateful for the miracles that are here today. I mean, a person with your problems just a decade or two ago wouldn't have had a chance, and let's at least thank God and some wonderful scientists somewhere that these treatments are available at all. Sometimes I think we take them too much for granted. With regard to Medicaid, I'd be happy, again, if you'll give a name and number, we'll have this case looked at. I'm familiar with some of the rules you're talking about. I mean, Medicaid does have to be preserved for the poorest among us. There'll never be enough to do all the things we might want to do, and that's why there are rules that sometimes can be unfair or misapplied that limit Medicaid to folks who really have very few dollars. And you know, I don't think it's your situation at all, but there's a lot of problems going on in Indiana and every state with some folks who manage to hide their income or give it off to other family members and then throw themselves on the taxpayer and ask Medicaid to pay for their bills. And so in trying to write rules that do protect Medicaid dollars, which as many of them as there are, I mean, we spend $1.8 billion more or less of Indiana tax dollars plus almost twice that in federal dollars, and it's still not adequate. In trying to protect those, there can be unfairnesses, and maybe in your case there is one. So please, name and number, and I've written down the general nature of your problem.
All right, another question here in the studio.
This goes back to the price of gas going up over the summer, and gentleman asked earlier, why didn't you drop the gasoline tax? Like, I think it was either Governor Curran or O'Bannon did about 5 or 6 years ago when the price of gas went up. Why didn't you raise it like some of the other governors in around the country?
One, because I didn't think it would have provided any meaningful relief. It would, you know, another, you know, 10 or 15 cents. I mean, you could say every little bit would help, but I was not convinced that it would provide meaningful relief. And meanwhile, this state's broke, and this is one reason we went broke. You know, it probably would have been short-term popular, but I don't make decisions honestly based on what I think will be immediately popular. I'm trying to do the right thing, and in this case, getting this state out of debt and having money to build roads is to me is a right thing. So I kept an eye on it. If prices had continued up, I might have done it. If they'd stayed up there where they were, I might have done it. But as a matter of fact, you know, some governors did this thing that you're talking about, and gas prices plummeted, you know, while they were doing it. I think, frankly, that maybe it was a step that they might look back on and say was really not that useful.
Let me get one more quick one here. Frank in Lafayette, you're on with Governor Daniels. If you could make it brief, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, thanks for listening.
Governor Kernan last year proposed all-day kindergarten statewide in Indiana, and unfortunately it did not come to pass. You've talked time and time again about accountability with schools and standards and whatnot, but the overwhelming amount of evidence suggests that the best way to improve student performance is to increase funding for Head Start, preschool, kindergarten, etc. What do you intend to do to address this problem or this issue?
Well, Frank, first of all, I agree with you completely, and I agree with all-day kindergarten. I've often said that as soon as we can, I want to see us do it. It may be the first of those additions that I talked about to our education system. I mean, the reason it didn't happen wasn't because people didn't know or most people didn't agree with you. It was because the state was broke. And it cost $125 to $150 million to do this, and we didn't have it. By that time, we'd blown a $2 billion surplus, run through the rainy day funds, outspent our income for year after year, raided the teachers' pension fund, stiffed local governments and schools for $718 million, and the cupboard was bare. That's why you didn't get all-day kindergarten. And when folks say, don't move so fast, don't be so careful with the dollars, I say no. We have a duty, first of all, but secondly, the sooner we can get back, sooner we can get this ship bailed out, the sooner we can set a new course for important goals, and I would rate all-day kindergarten very, very high in that list. Let me just give you one more fact, Frank, just to size this for you. When I talked about my new program to put more dollars in the classroom, and I said, 1% is $100 million, the equivalent of 1,500 or 2,000 teachers, the equivalent of a free computer for every high school kid in the state, 1.5% is enough to pay for all-day kindergarten.
1.5%. We just have a minute here. I just want to ask you really quickly, what is your priority for this year? One or two, maybe?
And number one, the Major Moves Transportation Plan. It's the jobs vote of a generation. And we can argue how many thousand jobs, but it's thousands and thousands of jobs, and it's to put our state in a position where businesses from everywhere will want to grow here or even come here. Two, dollars to the classroom that I just talked about. Let's move money from overhead to teachers. Let's move money from the back office of education to the front lines. And number three, we got to do something about local government. Let's modernize it. One consequence of that will be lower property taxes. That's a big job, too.
We sure do appreciate your time tonight. Thank you for joining us here, and thanks for being around the state on radio.
I appreciate every one of you. I appreciate the radio network and the TV stations who are with us sooner. I enjoy this occasion every chance I get, and very much sharing it with the whole state.
All right. Thank you, Governor. A conversation with Governor Mitch Daniels. You've been listening to it here on Network Indiana. I'm Steve Simpson. Thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.